Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. Today we're joined by John Andrew Entwistle. So hi John Andrew, could you share a bit about what exactly is Wander?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. Super stoked to have been connected. So a little bit of background on what Wander is. You can kind of think about it like Airbnb, but we own all the homes and really control that guest experience. So when you think about the short-term rental and vacation rental market today, you have three different players. You have the booking platforms, so think Airbnb, VRBO. Underneath that, you have the property managers. You can think companies like Evolve or the local companies. And then underneath that, you have the actual asset manager, which in the case of vacation rentals is really just the homeowner. And the problem for consumers is that typically those three parties have a difficult time coordinating, and that leads to a low customer satisfaction rate on the underlying experience. And so the big idea with Wander was, what if you could pull an Apple and own the hardware and the software and deliver this really incredible customer experience? And so that's effectively what we built.
Question for you. So as I was doing research about you, I realized that this wasn't your first time rodeo at this. So what was the scrappiest thing that you and the team did to build out Wander?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are a lot of scrappy things that early stage startups and teams have to do really in this pursuit of finding idea market fit. I always like to say that it's easier to launch an idea than a product, and you really want to make sure that there's customer reception before you go ahead and really invest capital and build the product. And so we've done a lot of very scrappy things, from launching obviously the idea of Wander with just the idea and the web page and the wait list, to obviously like getting together all of the social handles and otherwise was quite a bit of work and scrappiness, and then actually launching the underlying product on a very fast time frame leads to a lot of cut corners when it comes to the technology and taking on technical debt and all that sort of fun stuff. So there are a ton of different aspects when building an early stage company that you have to be scrappy on. In fact, I don't think that dynamic ever changes. I think some of the best public companies and late stage companies still have that very scrappy dynamic. Amazon, I think, was one of the most famous, where Jeff Bezos would have the new employees build desks out of doors to keep costs down. And that dynamic continued until Amazon was pretty big. I don't think they do it anymore, because you know they probably run out of doors in Seattle. But that dynamic, I think, is super important for companies.
Yeah, that was a really interesting point you shared about Amazon. So my next question is, so what are the companies that you admire?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many. I actually tend to find something about every company and team that I can admire. I think that Amazon is a truly incredible customer-focused business. If you go back and read through Jeff's annual letters or some of the books that he's done, interviews, the focus on the customer was really remarkable. And they actually had a pretty incredible customer satisfaction score very early on. That was something that they continued to point to even during the dot-com bubble, when the stock was sort of being obliterated and analysts were saying that it was going to be a failed company. They continue to point to their strong growth and even stronger customer satisfaction score. I think it was something like 85%, which is pretty remarkable in a business like theirs. And so I really admire that aspect. I admire Apple's quality and consistency and love for design. I love Nike's, you know, athletic and competitive culture. There's so many different pieces of so many different companies, but really what I find is customer focused, high quality, highly competitive, and high output, along with companies that have a soul, companies that truly care about their customers and the future and humanity, is something that's really important to me.
My next question is, so how is Wander incorporating a vision of humanity and such into their business? And yeah, anything you could share on that, anything that you've got coming up on the future on that as well?
Absolutely. So when you think about Wander and what the end product is that we deliver, at the end of the day, it's an incredible experience for our customers, right? It's a honeymoon or celebrating a birthday or hanging out with friends at a location that is not your normal daily setting. And so for us, when you think about what is the end product, it's really happiness and memories and giving people a wonderful escape. And so obviously at the center of that is the people that we work with. Now, over time, we want to expand and make that dynamic more and more accessible and all those different pieces. But to start, obviously, Wander sort of has to be very focused on the customer. The other dynamic, which is really interesting, is with the introduction of the Wander REIT, the actual underlying real estate portfolio is also owned by our community and by our customers. And so we're not just, you know, reliant or required to deliver a really incredible guest experience for them, but they're also sort of our boss when it comes to the underlying real estate as well. So it's a really, really interesting dynamic from that perspective. It's sort of true community ownership.
You spoke. Hey listeners, just a quick note from our sponsors, AI Buddy. So welcome to the future with AI Buddy, your new AI chatbot for WhatsApp. Powered by GPT-4, AI Buddy is not just smart, but also capable of understanding context, making your chats human-like, and the best part, it lives in your familiar WhatsApp interface. No new apps needed. So for answers, fun, or AI curiosity, turn to AI Buddy. And for our listeners, enjoy special 10% discount with code Ruhi. Visit AIBuddy.chat today and bring the future to your WhatsApp. Now let's get right back to the show. Great deal about community ownership. And now I'd like to pivot away into raising millions in VC money for Wander. What could you share on that for the audience who's looking to fundraise today? Like, what's the number one thing they have to know, number two things they have to know to be able to successfully fundraise for their startup?
Absolutely. So when starting a company, you sort of have two choices. Well, you have quite a few choices, but one of them is how quickly you want to bring this vision to life. And typically, you can either bootstrap a company, which takes a little bit longer, but has certain advantages, or if it's a big enough idea and suitable for venture capital, you can go and raise venture capital from angels and firms and individuals. And in doing so, you're able to sort of accelerate that vision, right? You're able to do a lot more, a lot faster. A good example being that Wander is only a two-year-old company, even though we're sort of the size and scale that we are. And so in terms of advice for raising venture capital, the first thing is that your business has to be fundable for venture capital. So venture capital is best applied for larger ideas that scale quickly. So some companies that have fit that dynamic historically, SpaceX obviously being one of them, Tesla was obviously a venture-backed company. In fact, most of the large public companies that exist today have been venture backed, except for obviously the ones that are far, far more established. And so the first thing is having an idea that's big enough and can scale fast enough that venture capital would make sense. You can sort of think about venture capital like putting fuel on the fire. And so that's sort of step number one. Step number two is obviously getting in contact with investors who share your vision for the future and obviously have the capital to infuse into the company. And then from there, you really need to execute. You know, unlocking future rounds, think your seed and Series A, Series B, and beyond, your company has to hit certain milestones in a certain time frame to continue to be fundable. And so that's also a very important dynamic.
So what's your top advice for founders?
Gosh, I mean, I have so much advice for founders. I think the biggest thing is to be incredibly thoughtful about what you're building in the future. A lot of times founders will just default to solving a problem, you know, writing code, designing a product. And I think that that's generally good advice because there are certainly many people who have the opposite problem where all they do is think and don't actually build anything. But my advice is really to be very thoughtful about the future, to plan and strategize, to have a cohesive and thoughtful vision about what you want to build and what that end product's going to look like, and then test that idea across as many different people as possible to see if you have idea market fit. And then once you're sure that this is the company that you want to build and it's how you want to spend, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 years of your life, then, you know, get started and be off to the races. I always like to tell the founders that I'm invested in that if they're building the right idea and they work hard and they're unafraid to pivot, that they'll build a successful company. And building the right idea is actually incredibly, incredibly important. So that's sort of my biggest advice, is to be very thoughtful. Then the other piece of advice that I would give early stage founders is to de-risk your startup. Your startups obviously have an incredibly high chance of failure, particularly in the pre-seed and seed stages. And any way that you can de-risk that, think hiring really great talent or raising additional capital, sort of even more than you would think. Those dynamics are really important. You'll see multiple opportunities to de-risk your startup success as you're building. And so it's important to always be on the lookout for those and take advantage when you see a way to de-risk the success.
Yeah, that's some great advice for founders, and I especially love your point in finding idea market fit. So how did you find idea market fit for Wander, and what were some lessons and mistakes you learned as you scaled up and as you grew this to a big company, or like just as you grew the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So idea market fit is when you take an idea to potential consumers and their eyes light up and they're excited about it and the future, and they want to give you money even before it exists. And there are different levels of idea market fit. And typically, how strong the idea market fit is how strong the product market fit will be, assuming that you do a good job explaining and visualizing it to the consumer. Now, obviously, if you do a bad job visualizing and explaining it to the consumer, then they may not get it. And so you may not see that idea market fit. So really make sure that they understand it and they can repeat it back to you. And then once they do understand it, understanding their reception towards it will give you a lot of great indication in terms of how successful this idea is going to be and if you are going to have product market fit once it actually exists. It's also really useful because if you have idea market fit, but you build the product and you don't have product market fit, then you may have to do some more iteration, versus a lot of times what founders do is they'll build a product before understanding if they had idea market fit, and then they'll try iterating the product to idea market fit. And that's a much longer journey. It can take many, many years as your product goes through and evolves to try and find idea market fit if you're sort of building alongside it. In terms of Wander, I think that we solve a pretty common pain point where people go and experience different vacation rentals and it just doesn't necessarily meet expectations. And so delivering on expectations in this space had a pretty strong reaction from almost everyone that we talked to. And so when we launched that idea more publicly in the form of a wait list, we saw really great reception. I then took it a step further and we introduced this concept of founding membership, really number one, to allow early believers to have a real place in the company, but then also to really validate, is this something that people would actually pay for? So the founding membership was basically a paid piece of the waitlist and gave those founding members extra perks. And once we had done very well with that idea, I think that there was a little over 2,900 founding memberships, and I think they were $100 each. So it was close to $300,000. Then we really knew that we were onto something. And that's actually something that Tesla does very much today. Like they launched the Cybertruck, and then you can reserve your slot for $100. And so that way they have a more high intent wait list that they know when they go and build this product, that some portion of those folks are going to end up converting and purchasing a vehicle. In the case of Wander, that they're going to go and book a trip. And so those were the steps that we did before we actually launched the company. And when we did launch the experience, the reception was really incredible. And fortunately, we were able to execute on that vision and deliver a great customer experience. And so that's sort of driven our scale from launch to where we are today.
That's great. And I loved, absolutely loved your point on delivering on expectations and allowing early believers to have an important place in the company. So it was an absolute pleasure and an honor to host you on the podcast today. And thank you so much for your time, John Andrew.
Absolutely. Happy to be here and excited for your podcast to continue to grow.
So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I have an open opportunity to reach this audience. So if you want to reach college students and freshers interested in startups and venture capital, and just in terms of the demographics, the age of 18 to 22 is the highest age demographic, and India and US are the two largest country demographics of listeners for this podcast, email me at bizpodruhi@gmail.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode, and hope you've learned something new.